Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr., Alice Bryant, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
Iran's Nuclear Energy Agency says the country has broken limits set in its 2015 nuclear deal with world powers. The agency reported on Monday that Iran began enriching uranium to 4.5%, passing the 3.67% limit set under the deal. The international agreement was meant to restrain the country's nuclear activities. The higher level of uranium enrichment is the second time Iran has violated the agreement. Last week, Iran said it had produced more than 300 kilograms of low-enriched uranium and announced plans to continue making more. Uranium enriched to 5% is reported to be enough to produce fuel for a nuclear energy center. However, it is far below the purity needed to make a nuclear weapon. For such weapons, a purity level of about 90% is required. In recent weeks, Iran said several times that it would surpass limits set by the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Iran's government is trying to pressure other countries, especially those in Europe which signed the agreement, to do more to help Iran economically. The United States, China, and Russia also signed the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said last week that Iran was prepared to enrich any amount that we want beyond the 3.67 level. He also announced that Iran would restart construction at the Arak heavy water reactor. That nuclear center was closed as part of the 2015 nuclear deal. A spokesman for Iran's nuclear agency suggested that Iran may consider enriching uranium to 20%. The Associated Press reported his comments. The official also suggested that Iran might add to its current number of centrifuges, the devices used to increase the purity of uranium. U.S. President Donald Trump warned Iran on Sunday to be careful about its activities. Trump spoke soon after Secretary of State Mike Pompeo wrote that nations should restore the long-standing standard of no enrichment for Iran's nuclear program. Pompeo's comments appeared on the social networking service Twitter. He went on to say that if Iran had nuclear weapons, it would be an even bigger threat to the world. The United States withdrew from the nuclear deal with Iran last year. At the time, Trump said that the deal was doing little to stop Iran from developing nuclear weapons. The Trump administration then placed additional restrictions on Iran. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
There was a time in recent American history when people depended on paper roadmaps. But the spread of GPS technology has changed that, probably forever. While few Americans use paper maps today, states still make them. And maybe that's not such a bad idea. Bruce Hull is a roadmap designer for the American state of Ohio. Hull's maps are unlike others you may have seen. For nearly 20 years, he has been injecting them with creative images and small pieces of family history. Ohio has the nation's busiest highway system after California, Texas, and Florida. And Hull's artistry has appeared on millions of maps, helping drivers travel throughout the state. As a layout design artist with the Ohio Department of Transportation since 1989, Hull has creative control over the map's look and feel. He chooses the images, design, paper, and even the kinds of folds that are used. Years ago, he wanted to move to either New York, Chicago, or San Francisco, he said. They were then the large centers for advertising. But Hull, who is 60 years old, studied advertising at the Columbus College of Art and Design. Then life happened, he told the Associated Press. Hull fell in love, got married, and had a daughter. In the early days at the transportation department, he was not the map designer. Instead, he put together other publications and images for road, rail, and motorcycle maps.
Back then, images were black and white. Film was developed in labs. Layouts were made by hand, and color was added with cut pieces of film. Nothing was ever too technical, because it was just impossible to do at the time, said Hull. The first map he designed on his own came in 2001 to 2002. That's also when he began including a picture of his daughter on the maps. Because there were seatbelt laws, he was looking for a photo of a child in a car seat. I found one, but it was $160, he said. His department rejected the costly picture. Then the idea hit him. He had a 6-year-old daughter. So he put her in the back seat of his car and took her picture. Ashley Hull has appeared in every Iowa State roadmap since then. Without knowing it, much of the general public has watched her grow up, in pictures, while camping, biking, driving, or laughing with friends. She's the most famous person you've never heard of, said Department Representative Matt Bruning. Hull's daughter is 25 now. He admits that her generation rarely uses paper maps. In the 1990s, Ohio made 5.25 million paper maps, on average, every 4 years. By last year, that number had fallen to 2.25 million.
I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Brian Lynn. Working at a desk all day may not be as bad for your health as sitting in front of a television after work. That is a finding of a new study done in the United States. It also suggests that not all forms of sitting are equally bad. Jeanette Garcia led the study. Garcia works as a researcher at the University of Central Florida in Orlando. We've been hearing more and more about how sitting is the new smoking, she said. She added that other evidence suggests a relationship between health problems and time spent sitting. However, it's been unclear whether all sitting is created equal, suggesting that as long as you reduce any type of sitting, then that's helpful in improving health, she added. This study suggests that this may not be the case, and that we should focus more on leisure time sitting, mainly television viewing time, rather than sitting in general. The study followed close to 3,600 African-American adults. Almost one-third of them watched television, or TV, for more than 4 hours a day. A little more than one-third of the subjects spent between 2 and 4 hours a day sitting in front of the TV. The remaining third watched TV for less than 2 hours a day. Researchers followed the group for an average of 8.4 years. During the study, 205 of the subjects died and 129 others suffered a heart attack or stroke. Compared to people who watched less than 2 hours of television daily, those who spent more than 4 hours in front of the TV were 49% more likely to die or have a heart attack or stroke. But the undesirable health effects of TV appeared to be limited to adults who failed to get the recommended amount of weekly exercise. That is around 150 minutes of moderate physical activity or 75 minutes of vigorous exercise every week. The study had some limitations, however. Lin Yang is a researcher at the University of Calgary in Canada. She says it is possible that sitting in front of the TV might be worse than sitting at a desk because people snack while they are watching TV. Some people simply stay up too late and do not get enough sleep, she wrote in an email. Eating treats or lack of sleep could both cause weight gain and increase risk factors for heart disease. These factors could make people more likely to die early, she added. Yang explained that the evidence on TV viewing and health risks is strong, even if the exact biological causes are unclear. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We begin the story of Bill Clinton, America's 42nd president. He led the United States for 8 years, from January of 1993 to January of 2001. Our story begins in 1991. In February of that year, American-led forces won Operation Desert Storm to end Iraqi occupation of Kuwait. Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein considered Kuwait a province of Iraq. He had invaded the oil-rich country in August 1990. Coalition airstrikes began 4 months later in January against Iraqi targets. The ground war took place in February and lasted just 4 days. The American-led victory in the Gulf War added to the popularity of President George H.W. Bush. 1991 was also the last year for the USSR, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. The collapse of the Soviet Union brought an end to more than 40 years of Cold War tensions and fears of nuclear war. In the United States, attention was turning to the 1992 presidential election. Many political observers believed President Bush would easily win a second term. But the economy was not doing much to help his chances. The United States went through a serious recession that lasted 8 months, from July 1990 to March 1991. Unemployment rose to the highest level in years. At the same time, the federal government was deeply in debt after years of borrowing. Bush was a Republican. Democrats saw his falling popularity as a good opportunity to retake the White House. They placed their hopes on William Jefferson Clinton. At the time, he was the young governor of the southern state of Arkansas. He was gaining national attention by talking about issues like education. Bill Clinton was born on August 19, 1946, in the small town of Hope, Arkansas. His name at birth was William Jefferson Blythe. His father, also named William Jefferson Blythe, was a traveling salesman. He died in a car accident 3 months before his son was born. At the age of two, the boy was sent to live with his grandparents while his mother, Virginia Blythe, studied to become a nurse. She married a man named Roger Clinton when her son was four. The family moved to Hot Springs, Arkansas. When he was 15, William Jefferson Blythe legally changed his name to William Jefferson Clinton. His stepfather drank too much and was sometimes abusive to him, his mother, and his stepbrother, Roger Jr. But Bill Clinton did well in school. He also developed a strong early interest in politics and ran for student offices in high school. In 1963, while still in high school, Bill Clinton went to Washington as a delegate to a Boys Nation program for young leaders. There, he got to meet President John F. Kennedy. Years later, Richard Stratton, who was president of Boys Nation in 1963, remembered that meeting.
It was a beautiful, bright summer day. It was July 24, 1963. And we were all assembled in the Rose Garden at the White House as a group, waiting for the president to come out. We all sat there, riveted in attention.
We want to welcome you to the White House, particularly because this belongs to all of you and because it's so intimately connected with the best in American history.
I was about the third or fourth person in, and he started here, and I sort of muscled my way up and made sure I got to shake hands with the president. He was quite generous. He went down the line and shook hands with a pretty good number of us who were there that night. It had a very profound impact on me. I think that, you know, it's something that I carried with me always. And I was very fortunate that someone took a picture of it and gave it to me, so I was always able to remember it.
Right after that frame, the famous frame of him shaking hands with JFK, there's another picture from the same film showing President Kennedy shaking hands with Jeff Keyes, another one of our boys, him from Florida, and Bill Clinton looking down at his hand with this wonderful look like I'll never wash it again.
Bill Clinton went on to study at Georgetown University in Washington. He graduated in 1968 and won a Rhodes Scholarship to attend Oxford University in England. He spent 2 years there before entering Yale Law School in New Haven, Connecticut. There, he met another law student, Hillary Rodham. She was from just outside Chicago, and she shared his deep interest in politics and public service. They both graduated in 1973. Bill Clinton returned to Arkansas. Hillary Rodham went on to become a lawyer involved in the congressional investigation of the Watergate scandal. That case led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon in 1974. That same year, Bill Clinton, a Democrat, ran for Congress in Arkansas. He lost the close race to a popular Republican. A year later, he and Hillary Rodham married. And a year after that, in 1976, Arkansas voters elected him Attorney General, the state's top law enforcement officer. In 1978, Bill Clinton ran for governor and easily won. He became, at the age of 32, the state's youngest governor ever. While Bill Clinton was governor, the federal government operated a detention center in Arkansas for Cuban refugees. The refugees rioted. That rioting hurt Bill Clinton politically when he ran for re-election. His opponent argued that he should have done more to get the government to hold the Cubans someplace else. Also, Clinton had supported unpopular new taxes. In 1980, Bill Clinton was defeated in his campaign for a second term as governor of Arkansas. But he regained the office in the next election 2 years later. That was before the term of office was increased from 2 years to 4 years. Clinton went on to serve as governor of Arkansas until 1992. While he was governor, education in the state improved. More students finished high school, and more went on to college. The state increased requirements for teachers and also increased their pay. Governor Clinton also expanded early learning programs for children from poor families. While governor, Bill Clinton also became active in Democratic Party leadership at the national level.
Make no mistake, this election is about change. Change in our party, change in our leadership, change in our nation. And that is why today I proudly announce my candidacy for President of the United States of America.
In 1991, Bill Clinton announced that he would run for the Democratic nomination for president. His main opponents were Paul Tsongas and Jerry Brown. Tsongas was a former senator from Massachusetts. Brown had been governor of California. Paul Tsongas later withdrew, and Bill Clinton easily defeated Jerry Brown for the nomination. Democrats held their national nominating convention in New York City in July 1992.
And so, in the name of all those who do the work, pay the taxes, raise the kids, and play by the rules, in the name of the hardworking Americans who make up our forgotten middle class, I proudly accept your nomination for President of the United States.
Bill Clinton chose Senator Al Gore of Tennessee as his running mate for vice president. The Republicans nominated President Bush and Vice President Dan Quayle for a second term. Another candidate in the 1992 presidential election was a Texas businessman named Ross Perot. He competed as an independent, a so-called third-party candidate. His choice for vice president was James Stockdale, a former high-level Navy officer and pilot. He had been shot down and held as a prisoner of North Vietnam for 7 years. During the campaign, Ross Perot argued that neither of the major candidates was taking the national debt seriously enough. He also warned of the loss of American jobs.
To those of you in the audience who are business people, pretty simple. If you're paying $12, $13, $14 an hour for factory workers, and you can move your factory south of the border, pay $1 an hour for your labor, have no health care, that's the most expensive single element in making a car, have no environmental controls, no pollution controls, and no retirement, and you don't care about anything but making money, there will be a giant sucking sound going south.
Bill Clinton criticized President Bush for not doing more about the economy and unemployment. Bush pointed out that the Democrats controlled Congress, and he said the Democrats had defeated most of his proposals. The president also talked about his foreign policy successes, and most famously, he promised not to raise taxes.
My opponent won't rule out raising taxes, but I will, and the Congress will push me to raise taxes, and I'll say no, and they'll push again, and I'll say, read my lips. No new taxes.
But raise taxes he did, and many Americans remembered that on Election Day. Bill Clinton and Al Gore won the 1992 election. They received about 45 million votes, or 6 million more than President Bush and Vice President Quayle. Ross Perot and James Stockdale received close to 20 million, or 19% of the popular vote. Bill Clinton became America's 42nd president on January 20th, 1993. At the age of 46, he was the third youngest person ever elected president. At his inauguration, the new president said there was no longer a division between foreign and domestic issues.
The world economy, the world environment, the world AIDS crisis, the world arms race, they affect us all. Today, as an old order passes, the new world is more free, but less stable. Communism's collapse has called forth old animosities and new dangers. Clearly, America must continue to lead the world we did so much to make.
But even as he took office, critics were questioning Clinton's character. There had been accusations during the campaign about relationships with other women in Arkansas. And there were questions about an investment that he and Hillary Clinton had made in a land development project back in 1978.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.